This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everyone. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak live on BBS Radio every Tuesday and Wednesday night at 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time or by going to our site at www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can also listen to past shows on our iPod Ready Archive section. That's www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. And now, for those of you that have Nokia phones, you can listen via satellite on your Nokia phone. Just go to the website for details. Our guest tonight is a real treat for me. Phil Donahue is a personal hero of mine. In the early days of television talk show, this man set the bar for quality and informative media when the term media was not a four-letter word. The Phil Donahue Show, fondly known as Donahue, had a 26-year run. In 2002, Phil Donahue returned to television to host a show called Donahue on MSNBC. On February 5th of 2003, MSNBC canceled the show, citing low viewership. Donahue was the highest-rated show on MSNBC at the time it was canceled, managing to beat out even Chris Matthews' Hardball in ratings. Soon after the show's cancellation, AllYourTV.com reported it had received a copy of an internal NBC memo that stated Donahue should be fired because he would be a difficult public face for NBC in a time of war. Donahue was the only host of a talk show on a cable network that had believed that many of the MSNBC was under pressure from the powers to be that be to cancel the show and replace it with a more positive take on the conflict. As par for the course in the life of Phil Donahue, he took all this in stride and set out on his next task, and here he is tonight to talk about his latest production, the poignant film documentary, Body of War. Hello, Mr. Donahue. Welcome to the People Speak Show.
Thank you, Basil. I'm pleased to be here.
Well, it is an honor. This is an incredible documentary, I have to tell you, for those of you who have not seen it. And for anybody that's interested in finding out more information, you can go to thebodyofwar.com on the Internet. In this film, Phil, you brought the war home. Why?
Well, I think, as I'm sure you know, this is the most sanitized war of my lifetime. I mean, nobody sees the pain of this war. This nation is going about its business without any idea that there are over 25, maybe 30,000 serious injuries have come back from this war. People are blinded in this war. 20-something with, you know, faces disfigured, paralysis. I met Thomas Young at Walter Reed, and this was shortly, I would say very early 05. And I just couldn't get him out of my head. He was very loopy, very medicated, and we didn't have much of a conversation at all. But as I stood next to his bed, his mother briefed me on the gravity of his injury. Thomas is a T4. The bullet exited or severed his spine between the shoulder blades. If you put your arm up around, over your shoulder and drop your hand as far down your back as you can, that's T4. Thomas is paralyzed from the nipples down. Thomas can't walk. Thomas can't cough. You know, the closer you get to this young man, the more it blows you back with the, you know, how grievous is the injury, how permanent it is. And you see him and you have to say to yourself, why him and not me? That's the first thing you think of. And then I thought, you know, the American people should see this. Less than 5% of us are sacrificing this war. And those 5% are never seen. I mean, it's amazing. The president said you can't take pictures of the coffins, and the whole press corps said, okay. We have, I'm certainly not the first person to call our attention to the fact that media has pretty much wimped out here on this war, and there's been thousands of words of apology published by the Times and other big major dailies. But it's worth remembering, Massima, that every major metropolitan newspaper in this country supported this war. That's what you get with corporate media. That's why what you're doing is so important. You're not reliant on those big guys. And speaking against the war in October 2002, the month of the in which the resolution was passed by Congress, giving the president permission to go to war, it was, being against the war, if you were on television and against the war, it just was not good for business. You did not want to have a person criticizing Rumsfeld and our president at that time. And it's amazing how successful this president was in getting the nation to just shut up and sing. And we all stood there. I'm not everybody, but most of us stood there mute while this president just took this nation by the ear and led it right into the sword. This is a massive blunder.
Phil, why were we so easily convinced?
The president had a lot working for him. First of all, Saddam, was a first-class ogre. I mean, this man is beyond reprehensible.
Yes.
But so are a lot of other. It doesn't mean we sacrificed over 4,000 of our own people and over 1 million Iraqis. That's the count now in this war. And by the way, we sold him the gas that he used. He was our SOB for a long time. We have pictures of Rumsfeld shaking his hand in the 80s. But this president came to office wanting. He wanted to go to war. And he had everything going in his favor. We have a book out titled War Made Easy by Norman Solomon. He makes the case that if a president wants a war, he can have one. We have millions of people in this nation who believe it is unpatriotic to speak out against the president when he's ramping up for a war. They believe this. At a time when we need free speech the most, we are silenced. So you had a compliant public, by and large. There were a lot of people with misgivings, but there wasn't really an outcry. All right, that's okay. He's got that now. He's got the populace pretty well. Now he's got the whole media establishment, including the New York Times, the L.A. Times, Boston Globe, Chicago, pick a paper. They all wanted to bomb somebody. And then we learned on the New York, in the front page of the New York Times this past Sunday, that all those generals who were on all those shout shows, experts, CNN's military analysts, MSNBC's military analysts, they were going to see Rumsfeld in the office regularly to get their talking points. And they almost everyone has a connection to a defense contractor of some kind. So they're getting paid to support this war by companies that profit from the war. And they are getting briefed by Rumsfeld before they go on the air. I mean, to stand up and vote no in this environment in October 2002 was a tremendous act of moral courage, and 23 senators did. 23 senators out of 100 voted against this war, and 133 members of the House. This president scared the hell out of this nation. They all took the White House talking points. You can see it in our film. They're on the floor of the House and the Senate, and they're reading the White House talking points, written by the White House Iraq Group, WIG was the acronym. These were the advertising agency warriors, the people who name our invasions, shock and awe. Rolling thunder, imagine. We have video games now.
So we're in the throes of a war that basically was dictated by speechwriters.
That, and yes, the longer we wait, the more dangerous he becomes. A smoking gun will become a mushroom cloud. A gun smokes after it's been fired. On and on. Saddam is coming. Saddam has this. Saddam has unarmed, unmanned aerial vehicles that he can use to bomb our cities and kill our children. He's outside your bedroom. He's under your bed. Almost that bad. Ted Stevens of Alaska stands up in the middle of our film on the Senate floor and says, history will show that the nations that stopped Saddam Hussein saved the world. This is how hysterical grown people could be if the time is right and all the stars align. I mean, it was a perfect storm, and it allowed the president to declare an unconstitutional, engage in an unnecessary, unwinnable, unaffordable, immoral war. And here we are, sending more people. We're sending more people to this mistake. This is horrible.
This young man was an excellent choice for the film. Congratulations on, and obviously I think that whenever something like this happens, I think there's a force of attraction that brings filmmaker and documentary together. But for me, he was very real. And I say real, I don't mean like there are real Americans and false Americans, just that this young man is someone that we can all identify with. He was an average young man that did what he did for the common good of America, a young son, a brother, a boyfriend, a real American that went to serve his country in a real war.
He signed up
5 days later.
Yeah. He signed up 9/13. He saw the president on the pile. And he's a very bright light. Thomas Young is the man about whom you speak. He's the subject of our film. He was 24 years old. And he went to Kansas City, heartland kid, who has gone from a life of singles bars, loud music, to a life of puke bands and urinary tract infection. His shoulders hurt because he has a hard time sitting up in his wheelchair. I mean, it just goes on and on. His pills have pills. The light bulb went on for him at Fort Hood. He was in basic. He said, why am I going to Iraq? I signed up for Afghanistan. Too late. Then he goes to Iraq. He's there 5 days, and he gets hit by an AK-47 round, and he's paralyzed.
So the cancellation of your show, which, by the way, broke my heart, was at one point cited to be too insensitive to a war-necessary mentality needed of our nation to enter an illegal and unnecessary war. Let me ask you, in light of this film and what we're seeing and the desanitization of this film, which is it? Do you think Americans are too sensitive to see what we're doing in this war, as you and Alan Spiro, the director of the film, have, as far as I'm concerned, brilliantly portrayed in The Body of War? After all, we as a nation stopped counting enemy dead after Vietnam. We decided we did not want to see the dirty side of war. Where do we stand on the sensitivity scale as Americans?
I don't think it's about sensitivity, Bassima. I think it's about, I can't find a good job. I just graduated from college. I'm a trucker who can't make a dime because of the cost of fuel. The house I own, my most valuable asset, is going down the chutes, and not only that, I can't get anybody to save me with my subprime mortgage. You can't waterboard somebody for not being as, I wish they were. I think it's really shameful that we have not exercised this fabulous right called free speech, which has been so hard won for us. We've had millions of people die on foreign battlefields to protect our way of life. That way of life includes free speech. If you're not going to use it now, we should stop sending these people to war. Stop wasting their blood. We'll get a Mussolini. He'll decide what's good for us. It's up to us. We can have the country we want. You can have old guys deciding behind closed doors, and going through your email, putting people in cages for years without any lawyer or Red Cross or communication. This is not the country my parents raised me to pledge my allegiance to. These are radicals in Washington. And they're talking democracy. Oh, democracy, democracy. They're chipping away at the one we've got here, which is the which is the most fabulous experiment, I think, in the history of civilization. This is a wonderful document. The more you get into this film and you see what this Congress did and how silent the people and compliant the people were, how aggressive and manipulative was the president and his henchmen, the more you're into this, the more you appreciate the vision of the framers, the people who founded this country. They were right. Don't give one man ever the power to declare war. It's too much of a temptation. Only Congress can declare war. It's a fabulous idea, and we have ignored it for years because Congress doesn't want the responsibility. They would rather close their eyes and give, quote, permission to the president if he needs to. That is not constitutional. That is not meeting the mandate of the framers, and we should stop it now. We should never let this happen again. If they'd obeyed the Constitution, I think Thomas Young would be walking today.
Thomas Young was at opening night. This film of his life provided him with a front row seat of his life and the impact on his life since his post-war injury in comparison to pre-war injury life. That must have been huge for him to witness this new image of what his body has become. How did he react that evening?
Well, you know, he put himself out there. He was brave over there and he's brave back here. My purpose of this, I went into this film inspired by the picture of the child running away from the napalm in Vietnam. I don't know if you remember that photo.
Yeah.
The child is stark naked. She's like 6 or 7 years old, and she is screaming as she's running in terror with her smoke coming off her back from the chemical, and the black smoke is billowing behind her. That picture won a Pulitzer Prize, and it should have. See the pain. Don't sanitize the war. And that was our intention here. I told Thomas that. He agreed with it. He put himself out there in this very intimate scenes that you see in our film, the scenes that make you wince, because he wants other young people his age, people of enlistment or draft age, military age people. He wants them to see this film because he feels he made an impetuous decision, and he doesn't want them to make the same mistake.
I have to tell you, during the film itself, the most, at least for me, the hardest part to watch was when the veterans of the against Iraq were marching in the streets, and there were protesters against them in the sidelines.
Right.
And I have to tell you, I cried. It just broke my heart that they could witness so many young veterans in wheelchairs,
continue the war.
Exactly. It's like, I just don't understand it. And then when they went on and these young mothers and wives of dead and fallen soldiers, just touching him just to get I'm telling you, it was really a very, very powerful scene.
That is that scene, that just scene rocks me every time I see it. I still can't get through it. You're talking about a scene where Gold Star family members, these are people who've lost a husband, a brother, a sister,
mm-hmm.
In the war, and they're holding up pictures of their loved ones, and with the other hand they lean over and they start touching Thomas. They touch his face, they put their fingers around the back of his neck, and I realized what was happening. Thomas at that moment becomes a surrogate. And for a nanosecond, these people allow themselves to believe that they're touching the loved one whom they will never touch again. He came home from the war that killed their loved one. So there's sort of a vicarious closeness that they feel. You know, you see this, and you see them holding up a picture, so helpless, so lost. You can see the pain on their faces. And, you know,
Every and
time
he knew
I
this.
See that, I think of, you know, the president, you know, bring him on. And I see the pretense. The people who beat the biggest drum for this war wouldn't think of sending their own kids to fight it. The hypocrisy, the marginalization of dissent, the dissenters don't love God. You know, they've got God. We don't have God. You know, we want to sing Kumbaya. This is what they do to us. We don't find anything about America that we love. And it's over the course of this film that I began to realize we love America more than they do. We believe in the Bill of Rights. We believe a woman's home is her castle. We don't think you should be rummaging around anybody's private property without judicial authorization. You know, free speech is a quaint idea to these people. Not very practical at times of war. You know, and we're out there saying, wait a minute. You know, first of all, we're getting a little tired of this. You're not patriotic stuff. You know, we resent it and we reject it. And we will never, ever surrender our right to dissent. And nobody should. Don't shush Rush. Don't shush us.
How did you choose this particular subject matter? What comes to mind for me is more like the broken body of a warrior. What triggered that title? I thought that was very profound once. So when I first heard of the movie, I'm thinking the body of war. All I could envision was troops in foreign countries as a whole collective body. I had no idea what I was in for when I put the DVD in, and it was so powerful.
Well, you know, first of all, this is the first injured vet that I ever met, and I met him 3.5 years ago. That's how long we've been working on this movie, more than 3.5 years. And I just saw him, and I thought the people should see this, and you know, I guess. You know, and then, of course, I think, can I make a movie? You know, that sounded really ridiculous. You know, that was taking chutzpah to another level, me making a movie. But so many wonderful breaks have happened. Ellen Spiro's the first break. I called her cold. I got her name from another person. She answered the phone, and I told her who I was, and she recognized me, thank God. And we wound up in, she accepted my invitation. We met like a blind date, Kansas City Airport. Off we go to see Thomas. And by the way, after Walter Reed, Marlo, my wife, and I went to Kansas City after Thomas got home to meet him. And it's the first time I really, you know, talked to him. He was totally incapable of communication. He was so medicated at the hospital. So that's when I first, you know, that's where I met his fiance. And as we're talking, I noticed on the coffee table there were bumper stickers. One of them read Draft Republicans, and I thought, wow, this, don't tell me. And it turns out this is a warrior turned anti-warrior, and Ellen grabbed this with both hands. She wanted to do the film. She did such wonderful work. I mean, she came back with, I mean, there are scenes when Kathy, Thomas's mother, says goodbye to her younger son, the next born son, who goes to Iraq. He's going to Iraq. So you have this mother standing next to her son in a wheelchair, hugging and kissing her other son goodbye. And then the little brother leans over and hugs his big brother in the wheelchair. Okay, see you, bro. I couldn't talk and I couldn't see. And when those troops march off with Nathan Young is the brother. Hiya, hold up, what's the DA? We're going to war out there. You hear a little voice in the background say, bye, Daddy. You know, the whole human drama comes down on your head here. And the American people are not seeing this. They just aren't. We know about the war. We feel terrible about the war. We know that people are being injured. We know that they're out there. We know that great sacrifices are being made. We know this, but we do not feel it. We don't. We don't feel it. You know what? Thomas makes a very important point, Beth. Thomas is in his house, in his wheelchair, watching television. And he's got a full screen picture of Britney Spears getting in the limo, out of the limo, the flashbulbs, Paris Hilton, whatever it is. And along the lower part of the screen, in the crawl, five Americans killed yesterday in an IED explosion in Baghdad. This is, the media has lost interest in this war. How'd you like to be over there, and the bombs and the bullets and everything's whizzing around you, and you read where the American people have forgotten about you? You know, we can't find jobs, we can't pay our bills, we're losing our house. Inflation and the gasoline going through the roof, the dollar's falling against the euro, you know. And less than 4% of these families have actually contributed, have actually sacrificed, and they're totally below the radar. I've never seen anything like it. The president, as I mentioned, said you can't take pictures of the coffins, and everybody said, okay. Nobody fights it back. There is no bite left in our Fourth Estate.
For those of you that have just joined us, our guest tonight on the People Speak Radio is Phil Donahue. He is, we are talking about his new documentary, Body of War, with Thomas, the injuries of one of our young soldiers and veterans, Thomas Young. If you would like to speak to Mr. Donahue, you can call us toll-free at 877-489-6350. I'm sorry. That was my fault. You can also call us at 888-228-4494 or email us on our website for questions for Mr. Donahue. This is, you bring about we have an email from Jack in Canada, Phil, who asked, would you consider seeking political office, preferably the Senate in 08?
I thank you, Jeff. I'm flattered. The answer is no. I'm 72. And, I'm very blessed. I'm a healthy guy. I'm lucky. And, but I would never be able to go out and raise. I just couldn't. I mean, call my friends for money and spend all that time raising money. I admire those who do this, but it's such a barrier to running. I mean, it certainly is for me. But more than that, I think I might be able to, maybe I can make more noise outside the public life than I could in.
Well, as long as you keep making noise, we're okay with that, Phil. One of the things that you had brought up was that here in the United States today, with all of the ills that have befallen our country, the housing, immigration, all of these problems, it seems like we have forgotten Iraq, and yet in the beginning of our election process, we all thought this whole election was going to be about Iraq, and that's not
that
how
amazing?
It turned out.
It's
unbelievable.
To me. Yeah, Iraq didn't come up for the first hour of the debate the other night. We're talking about flag pins. We're talking in public of whether waterboarding is torture. We look like we're not a serious nation.
I have to
We got a public citizen, a man on the payroll, public payroll, whose job description includes sitting on the toilet to see if a hand or if something comes under that thing from the next stall. I mean, what? What? And we bombed Grenada. And the American people stand there. I don't know. They say if we don't use it, we'll lose it. America is not guaranteed infinite life here. If we really believe all those essays that we wrote as children, why I'm proud to be an American, we better look up and get concerned here, because we have radicals now that are chipping away at the fundamentals of this fabulous experiment called the United States of America. And we have so much to share with the rest of the world, really. I mean, we have done so much. You know, nobody is saying our problems are over, but nobody has worked harder in terms of a nation to integrate its citizens. Nobody's saying everything's wonderful and racism lives, but, you know, the law and the evolution of the law and the effort to ensure that the cops don't riot and that they don't usurp the rights of a citizen, those are all noble things, noble ideas. And, you know, we get out of each other's way in New York City a billion times a day. We can be a very civil nation. We are. We can be a very civil people. But we've got to get brave enough to elect people who will reach out rather than lash out. I don't know what else is going to save us. We're never going to feel safe. We're never going to be safe until we stop this West Texas rootin', tootin', shootin' sheriff thing. We've got to stop this. Our children, our grandchildren are at risk because of the behavior of this country.
We have a call from Noah. Noah's from Iowa on line 3. Noah, you have a question for Phil Donahue?
Yeah, I do. My question was basically, is there a way to take the money out of the media? How to get that fourth estate to be strong again without having that corporate money greed there?
Very good question. Very good question. First of all, let us review here. Don't want to bore you. The airwaves belong to the public. They don't belong to General Electric or Fox or Warner Brothers or Clear Channel. They belong to the people, just like the Mississippi River belongs to the people. Nobody would sell the Mississippi River to General Electric and allow them to charge boats to use it. The only thing that will save us from corporate media, and by the way, there's a huge grassroots civic action underway by young people. I went to their convention a couple of years ago in St. Louis. 1,000 people registered. It's called Media Reform. And they march under the banner which says corporate media is ruining democracy. And it's, you know, it's true. You know, if you're a board member of one of the major media conglomerates, you didn't want an anti-war voice on your cable channel or your network criticizing our president. I mean, what in the world would you want to have a scold like that? That's how they think. So the only thing will save us is from the ground up. We're looking for media that is not beholden to stockholders, that, you know, the media is only interested in the price of its stock. It's counterintuitive for them to think of anything else. Journalism is not supposed to be admired and loved and honored and extolled. Journalism is supposed to provoke people. You're supposed to tell them occasionally things they don't want to hear. And that's becoming less and less likely. And because of, you have to be popular. The only way to survive on television today is to be popular. And you can't be popular if you're opposed to the war. You know, when I was on the air, the only people who could be against the war were the comedians. You couldn't be Bill Moyers, you couldn't be me, you couldn't, but you could be Bill Maher. You could be Imus was against the war. Franken, Al Franken, Colbert and Daly. You know, oppose this war, ba-dum-bum. It seemed that, you know, if you were able to make it funny, somehow, you know, the boardroom didn't care. But if you made a serious attempt to feature, you know, people from United for Peace and Justice, people from Iraq, Veterans Against the War. By the way, these are people you never see on the shout shows. The dissenting, so-called progressive voice has been totally marginalized. Totally silenced. and it opened the door totally, totally for this president to walk right through it. And now we have over 4,000 dead, over 50,000 casualties, and over 1 million Iraqis dead, not to mention 5 to 6 million displaced Iraqis, either in the country or to other nearby countries. This is horrible.
Absolutely amazing. Nether from California is on the line. Nether, you have a question for Mr. Donahue?
Yeah, Mr. Donahue, I was wondering, because I remember when the Iraqi war broke out, I called a local radio station called Air 101, and voiced my opinion. I said, I don't support the mission, and they never even put out on the radio that I have said anything against their situation. Now, do you think that government might have its hands on the media where they're only allowed to give out the official story?
Does the government have its... I want to understand the last part of your question.
Does the government have its hands on the media, and is the media also bought and paid for by the media officials?
Yeah, does the government have its hands on the media?
Yes.
You know, it doesn't have to be that overt. You know, they believe they're being patriotic. When a president calls a war, you have to shut up, sing, and salute. And anybody who doesn't do that, they've just convinced themselves that this is not patriotic. One of the reasons they allow themselves to say these awful things about those who dissent is that, as I say, dissenters are not good for business. People don't watch them. They don't like scolds. They don't like people who oppose the president. How could you do this at a time of war when our president, in front of the world, you are criticizing our president when he's trying to protect us from the Saddam who's coming over the hill with, Osama bin Laden, and he's got this ricin and toxin and all these poisons, you know? They just won't tolerate dissent. It's important for the American people to see this, because it's going to happen again. If you have a radio or television business reliant on the size of the audience, and that is the coin of the realm, the size of the audience, you're not going to want anti-war people on your program, on your station. Just period. You just don't. And I got a few things in, but I had to have two conservatives for every liberal. That was a rule that came down. I was considered two liberals, so that if I had if I were going against a conservative, I would have to go against two conservatives. Two of them. I mean, this is how, it's unbelievable. It is not overstating it to say that in October 2002, big media was literally terrified of the liberal anti-war voice. They wanted nothing to do with it. When CNN got a new president, the first thing he did was run to Washington and call on Newt Gingrich and all the other neocons and say, "We're not liberal. CNN isn't liberal." Apparently the rumor started to surface around that time that CNN was liberal, and they were totally panicked. Panicked. You can brag about being conservative, but you have to go into the closet to be liberal. Horrible. And this is the land of the free. Envisioned by the framers. Free speech. A lot of voices. A cacophony of voices. People bouncing off each other. People pushing and pulling. And maybe somewhere along the way learning something. And by the way, there's nothing diverse about the media we have. I've got the dish. I have 600 channels. But 400 of them are selling the Bowflex machine. And the other 200 are jewelry and Jesus. This is not diversity.
That is amazing. So let me ask you something. 50,000 of our young soldiers have been wounded in this war.
Well, there are some that, yeah, that some numbers put it at 90. One of the problems is you have a lot of unseen wounds. You've got head problems that are going to rattle around this nation for the rest of this century. So it's huge. It's huge. But you were saying.
Well, the point being is that due to medical advancements, these young men that otherwise would not have survived are surviving. Playing the devil's advocate for just a minute, Thomas survived. Good thing, bad thing? What have we committed these young men to a life of?
You know, it is true. Triage has improved. Thomas was helicoptered to launch tool. And more, certainly more than was true in World War II. More soldiers are surviving. And we want to celebrate Thomas's life and thank whoever it is you wish to thank, whether it be the Lord, fate, or whatever. We have to be grateful for that Thomas survived. Thomas and his mother believe they are lucky. Thomas's mother feels lucky. Her son came home.
Yeah.
And she has met and held in her arms the weeping mothers of young men and women who did not come home. And she knows that she came within a millimeter. You know, how that bullet went through, came down through his shoulder, exiting his spine without hitting an artery. This woman knows that she came within 1 millimeter of putting flowers on his cross.
Right.
And when she sees other women doing this, she weeps. You know, she feels an empathy for them. She feels what most of the American people do not feel. We're not seeing this.
You know, I believe that there is a, and I've thought about this quite a bit, as a parent, as, you know, because I believe that we are in these wars for a long time to come, and eventually there may come a time when we, all of us, must face someone that we love going into war. I believe that somehow, on some level, we have to honor the soldiers, even in death, because if we see with clear eyes and know in our hearts that as parents and as people close to these soldiers, that we sent them to die for a lie, how could we live with ourselves?
How do we live with ourselves standing here now while he's sending more people over there? This war is not fair to the American troops. And
absolutely
the people
not
in my film, I should say our film, Ellen and me, believe that one more death in this war is morally indefensible. We went to the moon. We ought to be able to get out of Iraq without jeopardizing the well-being of our troops. And we ought to be able to put together a coalition of nations. And with the help of the UN, that agency that so many of the bomb throwers hate. Oh, the UN, the UN. You know, what is it about the UN? What do they hate? Is it slow? Yes. Is it go on? And do they talk too much? Yes. But, you know, why would you hate it? Give it a chance. We have some opportunities here. We should be members of the world community. And instead, we're stomping around telling everybody how we're the last remaining superpower. We're bragging about our democracy when less than half of us vote.
Well,
when we have a draft, the rich don't have to go.
Well, this answers, I think, Sue from Massachusetts, an email asked, many people don't believe in voting for our next president. What is your opinion on this, please?
Well, you know, Sue is getting pretty close to what would be the level of cynicism. What good does it do? The problem is the Rock of Gibraltar, and I am a feather. And no matter what I do, it's not going to make any difference. So, like a lot of people during the Vietnam stuff, you know, anybody can go out and wave their arms for a weekend. but the people who know how small they are, who know how alone, how helpless they are, but who keep on keeping on because they believe they can join a coalition of other people of conscience, and they can help to draw even more people into what should become a mass, wide, deep movement of citizen dissent, where we are almost literally banging on the White House door and the Pentagon, and we're saying, we've had it. This is enough now. You've disobeyed the Constitution. Our country is in shambles. The vision of the framers has been lost. You've turned your back on this magnificent document, and we are here to say that we aren't letting you can do this anymore. Otherwise, you're going to get tired, you're going to fold, and you're going to go take guitar lessons or yoga or live under a car top somewhere in the Upper Peninsula. You're going to drop out unless you just make yourself, you know, believe that your contribution can make a difference and that you're going to get all your friends in this thing. Maybe you'll get a chance to see Body of War, and you'll see why people have been out there for many months now, alone on street corners, opposing this war. And what we are saying in our website, bodyofwar.com, you know, because the end of our movie says, what can you do? Bodyofwar.com gives you several ideas on what you can do. And we're saying, don't reinvent the wheel here. You've already got outfits, peace groups out there. Join them. You're going to meet a lot of nice people, and they're going to be thrilled to see you. You're amazing how many friendships are forged with, you know, with people who of conscience, who love America, and think that this is horrible what has happened here, and want to put a stop to it immediately.
I think that's probably the worst accusation for people that do, as you said, love America, that we are anti-American by wanting our troops home. We have a question from Howard in Ohio. Phil, what's the media's complicity in all this, and do the Zionists control our media like they do this administration?
No. We want to, you know, please, I'm afraid your anti-Semitism is showing. It's not about Zionism, and we can spend another several hours talking about the Israelis and the Palestinians. And by the way, there are millions and millions of Jews in America who believe that the Palestinians are people too, and that we have to cool the military response on both sides in this other horrible collision of old, ancient rivalries that are killing young people. And you see them weeping as they bury not only people, members of the IDF, but Palestinian people who feel trapped. And, you know, in order to get to work, you've got to go through three checkpoints. I mean, and there are people over there pushing other people's parents around. You know, when you see your father, your aging father, kind of roughed up, you know, by the people at the checkpoints. You understand the rage. And yes, there's enough sin to go around. But, you know, on the matter of the media, I don't think it's complicated. You know, the media is in business to make money. That's what they, and by the way, I don't think they should be waterboarded for this interest. It's legal to make money. The problem is they're using a public asset to do it. They've taken control of it. They've turned our children into consumers. They've you turn on your TV set and just take your clicker and go across the dial. On 80% of the stations, you'll find a commercial. I'll bet you. Do your own check.
Absolutely.
Check it on the hour and a half hour commercials. 3 and 4 minutes, 4.5 minutes of commercials. What we have is a television channels today are wall-to-wall commercials with an occasional interruption for programming.
We have a question from Lena from New Orleans, wonderful New Orleans, wants to know what do you think needs to happen in the Middle East when it comes to our foreign policy?
I agree. I support Jimmy Carter's effort to speak, to draw these people together. When I had my show on MSNBC, I had two fathers who were Jews who lost a child in a terrorist bombing in Israel. Both of them, young adult children. And the one father couldn't wait to bomb somebody. And the other father said, Itzhak, Itzhak, he was obviously Israeli born. You are thinking about the past. We have to think about the future now. You know, I mean, we had peaceful tomorrows on. This is an organization made up of people who lost loved ones in 9/11. And in October 2002, when I had my MSNBC television program, they came out and they said, you could see the pain in their face. This was less than a year after the towers. And they were saying, please don't go kill more innocent people to avenge the death of my innocent loved one. Not in our name do we want our nation to be dropping bombs on crowded cities at night where old people and children are sleeping. The courage and the father, the Israeli father who will never see his son again. I think it was a bus thing, you know, where, remember, we were seeing so much of that. Just the remnants, the skeletal remains of a bus. And he's saying, Itzhak, you're talking about the past. We must think about the future. And so must the American people. It's about our kids. If we don't join the world community, our grandchildren are more likely to be conscripted into a war caused by the hatred that we are generating around the world.
Absolutely. We have a call online, Phil Natter, from California, I guess, again. Hello, Natter. You have a brief question for our guest?
Yes, I do. Phil, it's great talking with you again. My question to you is, why is the media so biased towards Israel and against the Palestinians in every nature when it's broadcasting their news?
Yeah. Well, there's been all kinds of books written about this. It is true that certainly down through the years, it's hard. You cannot get away from the fact that America has a fondness for Israel and a country-to-country relationship with Israel that is very special. Israel is special. And by the way, I'm a graduate of the University of Notre Dame, and I went to Israel in 1985. I did a series called The Human Animal, and we did some shooting at the place of Armageddon, and oh, there's so much biblical history in Israel. The first real settlement, civilization, was remnants are found there. It's a wonderful place. I've been there. I've stood at the wall, and I've met a lot of nice people. It is also true that the people on the other side of the imaginary line are irreplaceable children of God as well. And increasing numbers of Jews, I speak especially of the members of Peace Now, very active in New York City, have grown, have come together, because they are concerned about Israel in dying by the sword, way too reliant on military solutions. Israelis and Jews who love Israel, who believe that the occupation is totally undermining Israel's prosperity, its safety, and its future. So, you know, it's a mistake to think that you know, it's all one side and all the other. There's a huge split within the Jewish community itself. And by the way, the debate over the future of Israel is much more robust in Israel than it is in the United States, I am told.
We have one more question from Phil, from Patty. What do you think about the unethical recruiting and downgrading of requirements of soldiers? Hey, welcome back to the People Speak Radio with Phil Donahue. We apologize for the inconvenience. Sometimes things happen on live radio. Before we end this, I want everybody to know that this is an absolutely incredible documentary. It is the desanitization of the war. This is what is happening to our youth. This is what is happening to our sons and daughters coming home from Iraq. I urge all of you to participate in witnessing this film. Many have called it the 4th of July for the year 2008. Phil, I appreciate you so much for doing this film. I'm sure that the families of our veterans also appreciate the work that you have done, and I thank you so much for being on our show this evening.
Well, it's been my honor. I thank you, Bessima, and I... Hello? I hope we can do it again.
I'm sure we will. We will be in touch, and we will be keeping tabs on the show, on the video and the movie. Thank you very much. Tomorrow night, everyone, I will be Professor Lauren Moret with our host, David Swanson. Professor Moret is an expert in depleted uranium. Next Tuesday night, I will be here with our guests, Ron Kovic and Frank Cavastani. Thank you all for being with us tonight. Good luck, and be well, and be aware, and be awake. Let's see what we can do to stop this insanity. Thank you very much.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of death, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering, if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is mine, there, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest, to the Gulf Stream water.